The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has agreed to face-to-face talks with Volodymyr Zelensky to talk about a peace deal in Ukraine. This is according to Donald Trump and the European leaders, although Moscow has yet to confirm a meeting will take place. The potential breakthrough came after a day of tense diplomacy at the White House, in which Mr. Trump ruled out a ceasefire while Mr. Zelensky and his allies pushed for US-backed security guarantees as part of any long-term agreement. Speaking ahead of the meeting with Zelensky and the other European leaders, Trump volunteered an optimistic outlook for a viable solution to the war, a war which he insisted was not his.
It's never the end of the road. People are being killed and we want to stop that. So I would not say it's the end of the road. No, I think we have a good chance of doing it. It's been almost 4 years now that a lot of people were killed last week. A lot of people last week. I mean, millions of people killed, but a lot of people last week for whatever reason. A big number, a lot of soldiers, both on both sides. And I know the president, I know myself, and I believe Vladimir Putin wants to see it ended. Right. Well, I don't want to say that. But this isn't my war. This is Joe Biden's war. He's the one that had a lot to do with this happening, and we want to get it ended. And we want it to end good for everybody. We want it to end good. The people of Ukraine have suffered incredibly.
Following the meeting, French President Emmanuel Macron spoke positively to NBC News about the potential peace deal, but he reaffirmed that if a deal is agreed, it must be favorable to both Ukraine and Europe.
And your president indeed is very confident about the capacity he has to get this deal done, which is a good news for all of us and can break this, I would say, this daily killings, which are the responsibility of the Russian aggressor. So I think it's a great news. My point, and this is why we've worked so hard during the past few months and we need this convergence, is to be sure that this deal is not detrimental to Ukraine and Europe. And we, all of us, we want a deal and we want a peace deal. But we want to make sure that this peace, and so this deal, will be something which will allow the Ukrainians to recover the country and live in peace, to be sure the day after this peace deal that they will have sufficient deterrence power not to be attacked again, and to be sure for the Europeans that they will live in peace and security. So this is the nature of the peace, which will be now the core of our work. But I think this is a great news, and indeed your president is very confident about its capacity to get this deal done with President Putin, and it's great.
French President Macron, the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations and Trump's former national security advisor John Bolton, remained a little more skeptical about the peace agreement.
Well, I would say it was a normal meeting, which is progress. But remember what the iconic French foreign minister, the Marquis de Talleyrand, once told his young diplomats: don't get too enthusiastic in your work. And I've always found that good advice. They had a normal meeting. That's great. Now let's see what happens. I think a ceasefire along the existing front lines on the battlefield, then followed by what could well be very extensive negotiations lasting months, years, could turn that ceasefire line into the new Ukraine-Russia border. There's always a risk of that. It's happened in numerous other UN peacekeeping operations, in the case of Korea in the 1950s. So there's a big caveat to that, which to carry on the war, Ukraine still has to have necessary military support from Europe and the United States. It sounds, so far at least, like that could continue. I don't think the Russians are going to negotiate really seriously until they suffer reverses on the battlefield. Putin thinks he's on a roll now, and they are gaining small amounts of territory at an exorbitant human cost. I think if those the movement of the troops was in the other direction, he'd be a lot more eager to talk.
Former Ambassador John Bolton will join me now to talk about this in greater detail. Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University, Paul Rogers. But first, we go to Ukraine and correspondent for France 24, Emmanuel Chaz. Emmanuel, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
What has been the reaction in Ukraine to what happened yesterday in Washington?
Well, you know, here in Ukraine, people feel that they live in an alternate reality, a parallel world where this morning we woke up to the news that Russia launched overnight 270 kamikaze drones and around 10 missiles against 16 locations across Ukraine. So on the one hand, there's that talk that everything is going well in Washington and that there is a breakthrough, which is true in the sense that apparently we are gearing towards maybe a meeting between Volodymyr Zelensky and Vladimir Putin, but that hasn't been confirmed by Moscow. But also here on the field, here on the ground, you know, strikes continue and Russia shows absolutely no sign of wanting to wind down its offensive, be it on the front line or, like I just mentioned, through air raids that daily, you know, worry civilians here.
So it was part of Vladimir Zelensky's mission to inform the White House, the team there, such as they are, that there were no preparations by the Russians for any kind of cessation in their activities. Maybe that message did not get through loud and clear to Donald Trump.
Well, you know, Volodymyr Zelensky, first off, there was a big unknown. It was how he will be welcomed at the White House. In that, we've seen progress, and that was not very hard to do since the last disastrous meeting in the White House between Zelensky and Trump on February 28th. This time, things remained civil between the two presidents, and also Kyiv came with the support in the form of six European leaders. So that was a progress, of course. And also, Volodymyr Zelensky came up with specific examples of what Ukrainians are going through at the hands of Russians. He talked about those 19,000 Ukrainian children who have been deported by Russia. And that's actually why Vladimir Putin is under a search warrant by the International Criminal Court, because this is a war crime. And so Volodymyr Zelensky showed to Donald Trump specific examples of children who have been going to this plight. He also offered a golf club to Donald Trump that was owned by a soldier who lost his leg during the fighting. And that's also something that, you know, spoke to Donald Trump. So concrete examples have been brought up so that Donald Trump would understand the plight of Ukrainians at the hands of the Russians.
Isn't it incredible that you have to go through that kind of charade with Donald Trump to get the message across? You've got to treat him like a child. But that is the way it is, unfortunately. So are Ukrainians a bit cynical about this whole process, or do they believe progress can be made? Because the fear is, if Trump and Putin and Zelensky meet in one place, wherever that might be, Turkey perhaps most likely, that Trump and Putin will turn on Zelensky. They'll outnumber him 2-1.
Well, you know, among all that noise, like diplomatic noise that we hear here in Ukraine, war is going on. And so people, that is the first worry of people, is what is happening on the ground. I've mentioned those air raids. That is the first preoccupation of Ukrainians, and also on the front line. I've heard a lot over those past few days that Russia was making progresses in Donetsk region. Can we zoom out a little bit time-wise and also geographically to see that Russia has been trying to seize the entirety of Donetsk region for almost 12 years now, and it hasn't succeeded. And when we talk about advances, they managed to get their hands on literally the rubble, which is villages that they transformed after pummeling it for months sometimes. When we talk about Chasiv Yar, so it was claimed that they recently managed to get a hold of Chasiv Yar. They've been trying to get it for over a year. It's the same for Pokrovsk. They had their eyes set on Pokrovsk, you know, in 2023. They started to really marching towards Pokrovsk in February 24. We are in August 25, and they're still in the outskirts of the city. They still didn't manage to get a foothold inside the city. So when we talk about those Russian advances, also look that since 2022 and the full-scale invasion, they only managed to seize what amounts to 0.94 percent of more Ukrainian territory than what they had since 2014. So all advances realized by Russia are quite relative. And you've mentioned it. This comes at a huge cost also for the Russian army. They are losing really an appalling amount of people every day, up to 1,000 soldiers. Russian soldiers are dying or are being injured every day in Vladimir Putin's ambition, which is to seize more Ukrainian territory. Is not going as well as Vladimir Putin would like the West to think.
Emmanuel, thank you very much for joining us from Kyiv. That's Emmanuel Chaz, who works for France 24. And listening to our conversation, Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, an intriguing day yesterday in DC.
Yes, unexpected in many different ways. Most people would say, well, the end of the day, it had ended without any kind of major bust-up, and given what's happened in the recent past, that was pretty good news. And I think that's fair comment. But the difficulty with all of this, and listening to what Emmanuel was saying, is the actual status of belief of essentially Donald Trump. You know, we had this extraordinary, almost rant yesterday about all these different wars that he's sorted. You know, he's been responsible as a peacekeeper in six different wars. If you look at the detail of those, I mean, to say it's stretching the imagination is to put it mildly. But this is where he's coming from, and this is what we've got. And at the moment, but it is just at the moment, things look rather better. You sense this caution in what John Bolton was saying. I mean, Bolton is somebody who has really moved radically against Trump over the last 8 or 10 years, but he sees it in a very different perspective. But overall, there have been some changes. I suppose the major ones are Trump dropping the idea of going straight for a complete ceasefire, but at the same time suggesting, it may not be very much more than that, but suggesting that security guarantees of some sort may be of value and may be relevant to something the United States could contribute. One senses that the main change, and we don't know whether it's a proper long-term change in the whole situation, is that Trump is slowly changing his view as to the value of the Ukraine war for his actual personal standing. No doubt he loved the position yesterday of having all the European leaders coming over almost at the drop of a hat. And that is something which plays hugely on his ego. But whether that will last, we simply don't know. And I think all one could hope for, some progress could be made while he has that mindset. It's as crude as that.
Now, two things. One is the security guarantee to be offered by the United States, the question of whether or not that would involve boots on the ground to be credible. And there are, of course, American boots on the ground in bases all over Europe. That's number one. The second thing is, what would his MAGA base think of a very public deployment of U.S. troops for that security guarantee?
Yes, I mean, if you actually take it in reverse order, what does the MAGA think? What does the MAGA base think? Well, that certainly would be pretty antagonistic. You do have a large proportion of people who support the whole MAGA idea, who are, in a sense, isolationist and want the United States to stay out of foreign wars. The fact that the United States is in so many foreign wars at the present time seems to be neither here nor there, because it doesn't seem to get recorded in the American media. So, you know, American involvement in key parts of Africa, what is happening in many parts of Eastern Europe, as you say, all the bases, that seems to go by the board. But if you actually get boot on the ground going into Ukraine, then that would be very different. But in the short term, I think Trump can wear this because he feels that he can always bring his base to order in other ways. The more general issue about, you know, what would actually be involved and would it involve boots on the ground? I think, frankly, that is unlikely. But on the other hand, you know, there are all sorts of middle ways here. So you would have major forward basing of supplies and the rest, not necessarily in Ukraine, but if in Ukraine, then not involving personnel. There are ways around this, but I don't see the United States wanting to have sort of a brigade, let alone a division, actually in Ukraine. I don't think that is a starter in the short term. But if there's any indication that the United States has changed its mood on this, then the one area that will strike home is in Moscow, because that is one thing that the Russians have been very keen on, not having any American involvement. And that, of course, is for historical reasons, going right back to the 1990s, when so much of the seeds of this war actually started.
Now, the question of Putin being an unreliable partner in this enterprise, I mean, Zelensky said, what do we want to achieve here? Are we going to just have a pause so that they can mount the next invasion or prepare for the next invasion of another part of Ukraine? But then we're looking at the United States as an unreliable partner. So Trump signs up to some security guarantee. Putin decides to have a go. If Trump is still in power, or even his acolytes in Vance or whoever it might be, or Rubio, they decide not to honor the commitment that they give at any peace conference. What then?
What then indeed? And that is the risk. This is why you have such a difficult position. People just do not trust each other. The Russians will not trust the West, and that goes right back to the late 1990s and very early 2000s. The West certainly, by and large, does not trust the Russians, although there are exceptions in the form of Hungary and, to some extent, the Czech Republic. And that is an underlying feature on the European side, where you do not have the sort of the full agreement right across the board within the most European states as to how to handle Russia. And that is an area where, of course, Putin is able to make hay, so to speak, because he can play on those divisions. The major European countries in this are obviously Germany and France, and to some extent Britain as well. They are relatively united now, with obviously the French view being slightly more independent, as the French position always is. But essentially, you do get some unity there. But yes, there are uncertainties right across the board. And behind all of this, one has to remember, or has to say it again, that the biggest beneficiaries to all of this, right across all the parties in the war, are the arms sales, the arms manufacturers, who are absolutely having a killing, if I may use that wrong term, right the way through.
A question here from a listener. Why can't you give Donald Trump credit where it's due? If this was any other president doing this, or Joe Biden, you'd be absolutely hailing him as the best thing ever. I'm not a huge fan of Donald Trump or his actions, but credit must definitely go where credit is due. He's done way more in the last couple of weeks or a month to try and bring Ukraine and Russia, that war, to an end more than anyone else in Europe or America. So he deserves full credit for that. What do you say to that contention? That Trump, because, you know, many people believe he's not a really serious person anyway.
I think there's some truth in it. One should recognize this, because one or two of the leading commentators have actually said, you know, you've got to give credit. There does seem to be a change here. The real problem with all of this, yes, if people, so to speak, give credit to him, and then they find they're back where they were before in terms of the way that Trump has behaved. The difficulty is there isn't the trust in the continuity of his position. And that, I think, counts against him. But in other respects, the reality is that you compare what happened yesterday with what happened a couple of months ago in the White House, then yes, it is progress. And Trump is partly responsible for that. I suppose the issue is that when you look in more detail at all the ramblings that are going on around all the comments he makes, you do wonder exactly whether he is in full charge of his own opinions.
Which is a big question that is being debated more and more in the public domain in the United States. Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.